It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Well, gee, who could have seen that one coming, huh? Boston Red Sox dropped 2-3 to the Tigers over the weekend. Almost got swept. And that was an exclamation point on what was a brutal, brutal weekend for your manager, Alex Cora. I'm not going to call him Skipper, even though I'm not super happy with him right now. I'm not going to do that. He doesn't like it. But I will say that was about as tough of a weekend as he's had all year, maybe even going back to last year, maybe even going back further than that. These are games that are must-win games. You're in a race now for that last wild card spot. You're still technically in it mathematically. You haven't been playing very well, but you're still mathematically a part of this. And that weekend, it was treated almost like they weren't. Going all the way back to that first game on Friday night, a game that they won, a game that they went into the eighth inning with a 4-0 lead. And then instead of going to his setup guys, Cora leaves Bernardino in there a little too long. And he gives up 3 runs on 2 hits in his second inning of work. He goes an inning and a third, balloons his ERA up there. They go to Slayton. Jansen falters in the ninth inning, and Chris Martin ends up having to close it down there in the 10th inning as the Red Sox got a bunch of home runs there in the 10th from Rafaela and Jaren Duran. Clutch performance from them, to be sure, but not one that was necessary, not one that really needed to happen. And, I'm not convinced that 100% this bullpen is locked down as soon as you hand it to Slayton. You don't ever have to worry about it. Kenley Jansen showed you that for sure. But with a 4-0 lead, there was no reason to bring Bernardino out for another inning. And that was just the beginning of what was a weekend of baffling decisions. Game two. You sit down Masataka Yoshida and put in Rafael Devers, who has 2 bad shoulders and has been playing like it now for his last, 100 at-bats. He's hitting about 200. Yoshida's one of the hottest hitters in the league, and he gets the bet. That didn't make any sense. And then, of course, there was what you just heard from yesterday, which was the Red Sox getting a gem, and I mean a gem, pitched by Cooper Criswell. 4 perfect innings. He threw 52 pitches, 5 strikeouts, no walks, no base runners. And after that 4th inning, Rich Hill comes in to start the 5th, and what you just heard there was about the most predictable thing I've ever seen in my life, and that was Will Fleming and Lou were talking about it. I know the TV broadcast was talking about it as well. That was absolutely brutal, seeing that go down. And the Red Sox offense is not helping them either. I mean, listen, it's most of these games, it's 1 run or fewer, and that's a big problem in and of itself. But in this game, you had a guy working on a perfecto. You take him out of the game, and then immediately Carpenter walks and Torkelson, 1 batter later, puts one in the left field bleachers, and that was that. That's all Detroit needed. They end up winning 4-1, and the Red Sox now even further away than they were before, 4.5 games back in that wild card spot with 4 weeks left to play. Andy, what was the worst part of the weekend for you?
So, can I spin zone this a little bit?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Lord knows someone should.
Well, I just want to... We get caught up in these things sometimes, and I understand it. Perfect games, no hitters, pitch counts, decisions. Cooper Criswell is like a 4-inning pitcher, correct?
Not necessarily.
Sure. You got to go back a ways until he's had an extended outing. He's in the 3+ to 4+ inning range. So it's not like you took a guy out who you were saying, this guy might go a complete game, might give me 8 or 9 innings. And nope, it's not happening. So he was coming out at some point. The thing that baffles, like Rich Hill, like we're bringing in Rich Hill, a guy who
pitched in the last 2 games, I think.
And his fastball is being mistaken by everybody on the planet, all the stat services, stat casts, as like a change it, yeah, as a changeup. And
yeah. They're like, oh, no, that's the fastball.
Yeah, no, that's what I got.
That's the heater.
No, that's what I got. And I just don't understand some of that. And I know we romanticize Alex Cora's ability to manipulate a pitching staff in the postseason because he's done it. We've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some of these where it just leaves you kind of pondering, what are we doing here? You know, like, where'd you think this was going to? To what end? To what end did you pull Criswell and bring in Rich Hill? Like, how'd you think this was going to play out? And then you marry it up with the offense, which my favorite nerd, right? My favorite nerd on the pregame show, Joe Weil, told me, you're going to ride the offense, baby. To where? To where exactly?
It's written into the ground, I think. Yeah,
they don't get hits. They don't get runs. I mean, they have a couple home runs Friday night. That's great. Rafael, I want to be excited about the young guys. That's great. But you mentioned the Devers for Yoshida switch. So Yoshida just can't play in the field, correct? We've just decided he flat out can't play in the field. Just
pretty
can't.
Much, yeah.
Like, that amazes me. Like, you would... Because that's a... With that part of the equation, like, he's been so good offensively because apparently his wife's here and he gets home cooking and he's happy and settled and everything now, according to the Nesson broadcast. But I just... Yeah, there's some baffling decisions, but I think the reality of it is they're just not that good. Like, this is what happens when you're really scrambling, when your offense is going to scuffle, so you feel like, I got to get Devers back. Devers is my guy. Devers is the guy. Well, Devers has two bad shoulders, and Devers is not Devers. He's a shell of himself right now. And in doing so, in forcing that, you take out a guy who has been a pretty good hitter for you. Tyler O'Neill has, you know, the pumpkin is back. It struck midnight on his season a while ago. He's been putrid. There's not a lot of depth to this lineup at times. And then you marry that up with a pitching staff that you don't always know what you're going to get. Well, you certainly know what you're going to get in the bullpen at times, and it's not going to be good enough. And you're not scoring enough runs to win that type of a proposition.
Yeah, in Cooper Criswell's last three starts prior to yesterday, he threw 72, 79, and 82 pitches. Cora lifted him yesterday after having thrown 52 perfect pitches, basically. Had a perfect game going through four innings, but they took him out anyhow. Here is what Alex Cora said when he was pressed by the media about that after the game. Nope, we don't have it. Hold on one second. We'll get to that in just a second. While we're trying to get that audio, let me also tell you, Rafael Devers... useless is putting it nicely. In his last 97 at-bats, he is hitting .206 with three home runs. And if that sounds familiar, that's because in the last week, the Red Sox as a team are batting .205. So as Devers goes, it seems like the team's going with him. The next move here, and you mentioned this earlier, Andy, I agree, the next move is probably to shut him down for the season, get a jump start on whatever treatment or surgery he needs on these bum shoulders that he had. He's had a great season up until this point, and I have no doubt that if they were in that wild card spot right now, or like a game or a half game back, he'd be fighting through these injuries, but the team's imploding all around him, and something just tells me that's going to be one of those moves that you look at and think, okay, here comes the white flag. This is probably it. And I don't know. I mean, if Criswell, yeah, he hasn't gone deep into a game in a while, but there were points in the season back in July where he was going six or seven innings. And I don't even care about that. If you have a constructed plan, like a set plan, that says no matter what happens, we got to get Criswell out of there after four innings and put in Rich Hill, then maybe that's the type of situation where you call an audible and say, hey, you know, this guy's really dealing, and Rich Hill's a 44-year-old slop hurler, and let's maybe let the kid go out there and go another inning or two and see if we can squeeze some more runs out, because right now this offense really isn't doing much, and if we can make that margin as low as possible, that'd be good for us. And instead you go to the old guy, and I don't know. I mean, there's some decisions where I feel like there's a pretty obvious other side to it. I don't know that there's another side to this one. I don't know that there's a way to spin this one. I think this is one of those decisions that you scratch your head and then you just forget about it and hope that they can rebound. But at the time of the season that this is, where we are and how it all seems to be disappearing right in front of our eyes, I feel like this is one that's not going to go away.
Yeah, no, this is one that's going to leave a mark. I mean, when you lose a game, when you give up three hits, forget about the terrible decision, if you feel it was a horrific decision, like, you gave up three hits and you lose the game. That's hard to really blame on the pitching staff. I know two of them were two run home runs, and that's how you end up with, you know, four runs allowed on three hits, but the offense is just non-existent for and it's fine if Bayo's going to go out and give you eight shutout innings, right? Hopefully that's what happens tonight. But for the, you're not going to win a lot of baseball games when you score one run. You're especially not with this pitching staff at this point in the season, with the questions about all the young guys. And I do think it's interesting. I don't know how much you've listened to all the various sort of pregame interviews that we have every day, every game on our station. Cora has really talked a lot about the young guys, the young pitchers, the point in the season, how impressive they've been to get where they are, but you can't kind of let it fall apart once you get to where you are, right? Remember the old Tom Brady, we didn't come this far to just come this far kind of thing?
Yep.
It feels like they came this far just to come this far, and that they've kind of run out of gas offensively and as a pitching staff on some level. And again, maybe Bayo proves me wrong, and maybe he's peaking at the right time, but I've been interested how much Alex Cora has brought up the youthful nature of his ball club. And it's almost like he's not making excuses, but he's putting some stuff out there that if you wanted to interpret as excuse making, you probably could.
Yeah, you definitely could. And by the way, these are all things that both Cora and guys like, Rob Bradford were saying earlier on in the season were benefits for this team, right? Yep. These guys are so young, they don't know what they don't know. They're just going out there and playing. They don't know about the trade deadline. They don't know about the big expectations in Boston or following in the footsteps of blah, blah, and blah. Like, these are just, guys who are happy to be in the big leagues, and they're going out there and they're just playing some ball. And now all of a sudden it doesn't seem like that's as much of a feather in their cap anymore, to be sure. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We will play you what Alex Cora said when he was asked by the media about the decision to pull Cooper Criswell. And we will talk about the extension that he signed. And could it maybe have been a extension that was offered and given out by management a little prematurely? I mean, listen, it was right in the middle of the year. Everybody was riding high. There was still a lot of baseball left to be played in a month of August that has been the real boogeyman for this team and for this manager here now going on about 5 years. So we'll get into all of that with your phone calls at 617-779-7937 right after Zach Coe tells you what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Red Sox fell to the Tigers 4-1, your final from the Motor City yesterday. Sox dropped 2 out of 3 to Detroit. Cooper Criswell got the start for the Sox, going 4 perfect innings before being pulled in favor of Rich Hill, who was stuck with the loss. Sox now sit 4.5 games back of the final wild card spot after the Royals fell to the Astros 7-2, but the Twins defeated the Blue Jays 4-3. Next up, a trip to Queens to take on the Mets this week in a 3-game set that kicks off tonight. Brian Bayo takes the mound opposite Luis Severino for the Mets. Our coverage of that game starts at 6:10 with Cooper Boardman on the MassMutual pregame show. Then Will Fleming and Lou Merlone will have the call of the game on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, perfecting the art of fresh. First pitch is set for 7:10. College football kickoff weekend wraps up tonight when the Boston College Eagles head down to Tallahassee to take on the 10th-ranked Seminoles. Kickoff at 7:30. You can hear John Meter Perel's call of that game on WEEI 850 AM. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More of the WEEI Afternoon Show coming up after this.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. or if you overcame.
Two more rings, two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
That's how it ended yesterday. Unfortunately for your Boston Red Sox, they drop another one to the Detroit Tigers. And that is where we start here on this this segment of the WEEI Afternoon Show. I'm Christian Arcan, Andy Hart here as well, Zach Coe back in our Brighton studios taking your phone calls at 617-779-7937. He's all by himself today, right, Zach? You don't have any assistance back there. It's a one-man band.
Yep, just me back here.
All right, so seems go easy fine. On him there if you're calling in. Well, you wouldn't even know it. You wouldn't know it from the way
no.
The show's going. Sounds
rolling.
Perfectly smooth so far, which is very different from what the Red Sox are and very different from how they've been looking these days. The offense, as we detailed in that last segment, has gone completely away, and that's not something that I necessarily blame Alex Cora for. You know, like, I think it's hard to point to the manager. I mean, taking Yoshida out and benching him on Saturday wasn't great, but this struggles with the offense predate that. And I also don't necessarily blame him for the trade deadline either, because you brought in a couple of relievers who had ERAs in the threes, and since they got here, one of them, I think Sims's ERA is in the eights and Garcia's in the tens, or maybe I have those two backwards. Either way, it's been disastrous. Both instances, both guys have come here and neither one of them are cut out to play at Fenway to play for the Red Sox. They just both went completely in the tank and have not really helped out this team at all. And I don't blame Cora necessarily for that either. I think sometimes that just happens. That's a risky run when you go out there and try and trade for relievers. In general, I think that happens to a lot of teams every year. But what I do blame Alex Cora for is the decision to leave Bernardino in there too long on Friday. And the Chris Well thing yesterday, I can't get over that. I'm sorry. Like, that was a perfect game he was throwing. And Andy, you're right. He probably wasn't going to throw a 9-inning perfect game. I don't think anybody was expecting that. But I was expecting maybe to get him a little closer to the Slayton, Martin, Jansen trio, which is what we've all been accustomed to closing out these games here. And if it was a game where you needed to win 1-0, I mean, it just seemed like a better way of doing it. You know, your offense is struggling lately. You know, you haven't been getting really great dominant pitching performances that often. You did get one from Bayo his last turn in the rotation, but other than that, it's been sort of hit or miss. You know, Crawford had a decent game the other day, probably deserved better. Pavetta deserved better in his last start, but all in all, I mean, to yank a kid in the middle of a perfect game like that is just, I don't know, I'm sorry. His explanation just did not do it for me. If we have that, Zach, here's what Cora said when he was asked by three different reporters. He got pressed about this, taking out Cooper Criswell.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way we drew it up. They had a bunch of lefties. He gave us enough, and we went to Rich in that situation. We had a big pocket of lefties, so just a righty burn us.
So your hope in the beginning was for him to go four, and then
the hope was, like, to give us as many outs as possible, and then we take advantage of the matchups, and it just didn't work.
The fact that at that point he hadn't given up anything today affected what
you were saying? No. He threw the ball well, and, you know, we felt like that was Carpenter has been good against righties. We had the lead, so we went to a lefty.
See, I think that when you hear those type of comments from Cora, and I get frustrated by them, because when I think of Cora, I think of a guy who generally has a pretty good feel for the game, you know what I mean? Like, not someone who just sits there and does everything by the book. Well, we had a plan, we were only going to let him go four innings, and then we had to go to Rich Hill. Like, that's the type of stuff that the nerds come up with up in the, you know, like, that's what your front office with the statisticians and all these guys. Well, you can't go 2-3 times through the lineup because blah, 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 blah. Like, yeah, okay, but we're watching the game, all right? We're all sitting here, we're all watching the same game. We're all watching these Detroit Tigers get completely flummoxed by Cooper Criswell, and he's just dealing out there. And I always sort of considered Cora not that type of manager, not the type of manager who would just go by some weird plan that he instituted before. And by the way, the plan what? Is for Rich Hill to pitch 3 straight games? That's part of the plan. That plan sucks, I'm sorry. Forget the no-hitter, I mean, or the perfect game. That plan sucks even if you have pitchers who aren't pitching well. But when you have a guy out there throwing a perfect game, that just, I don't know. I look at that and I think this is not the guy I thought he was. I thought he was the guy who had his finger on the pulse of the team, was a good feel for these type of games, and a good feel for in-game decisions and stuff like that. And he stuck with that call to go to Rich Hill in the middle of a perfect game. It just seems like the risk was much higher than any potential reward. And if he had left Criswell in there and Criswell gave up the lead, everybody would have been like, okay, you know, you had to leave him out there. It was the middle of a perfect game. I'd rather see him out there than Rich Hill. I don't think anybody would have gone the other direction. And that, I think, is what's the least forgivable about that. And we can ask him all about it tomorrow. But right now, I mean, I think a lot of Red Sox fans want answers.
Yeah, the last part is the part I hate. I don't necessarily hate having a plan, but when you say, did it affect the plan? Does it alter the plan when the guy's dealing, when the guy's throwing a perfect game, and you go, no? Well, why not? Because I would hope it would affect the plan the other way if he was scuffling. Like, say Cooper Criswell gives up, you know, 6 runs in the first. He's going to yank him, right? But why? You had a plan. Let's try to get 4 innings. We had a plan. We're sticking with the plan.
Great
so
point.
If negative results can affect the plan, then positive results should affect the plan. And I also, from Cooper Criswell's perspective, Alex Cora doesn't think I'm a very good pitcher. Because I'm dealing, and no matter what, he's sticking to his plan. He doesn't go, my guy's dealing. I'm going to give him a shot to keep rolling. He thinks the wheels are about to fall off for me at any point. So he wants me out of the game sooner rather than later, in favor of a 40-year-old soft-tossing lefty who was, like, doing workouts at a freaking city park not that long ago. I would not take kindly to that if I were Criswell. Because, I mean, obviously, these are athletes. They're competitors. They have confidence in themselves. And for you to be in that situation and the manager to say, well, we're sticking to the plan, that isn't – is there any other way to take that other than a lack of confidence in him?
100%. I mean, I'm Cooper Criswell. Listen, I mean, I know I'm not exactly the ace of the staff or anything. He's generally been used in these sort of utility roles, and he gets spot starts, and sometimes he's the opener, and sometimes, you know, he comes in on relief, and he's not exactly a guy with a set part in this pitching staff or the rotation or the bullpen or anything. They kind of just use him whenever. But if he's out there dealing, you got to let him deal. When Alex Cora signed his extension, it was on July 25th, I should say, right? Was that the date? I think, yeah, July 25th, which was, that was in the second half. The second half of the season had been, you know, about 11 games in, and things hadn't been going great. Nope. But prior to that, you know, you look at the way that they were going into the All-Star break, and that's when the decision got made, I think. You know, you go into the All-Star break, you're just red hot. They were 25-15 in the 40 games going into that. And that's when the decision got made. All right, we're making this offer. It's going to be something that he'll probably take, even though he told us all, no, there's no number that I'm going to take here. I'm not sitting down. I'm not going to negotiate. This is something we'll deal with after the season. And they said, no. We're going to get this done, and we're going to give him a big contract. Not the biggest, but a big contract by MLB managerial standards. And I think that was all done under the assumption that things are going to be different this year. It seemed like things already were different this year. At that point, I was sort of believing that still. July 25th, they were still 8 games over .500. You know, so it hadn't all completely unraveled yet. And there was points in the weeks leading into the All-Star break where they were double digits over .500 and looked like they were going to lock up that spot in the wild card. And now to see this all happen again, it does kind of make you question the timing a little bit, doesn't it? Like, if he was really willing to not sit down and even have a conversation about it until after the season, why the rush to come in and give him that big offer, I wonder, especially with these Red Sox who are very stingy and haven't exactly been throwing money around here in the last year or two. All of a sudden, they see a win streak and decide, all right, we got to lock this guy up. Let's forget about the past August, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years. It was unlike them, you know. It was unlike the way they do business. I feel like that was a different way of doing it and a different sort of stance for them to take. And now I think a lot of people are wondering, well, maybe it was a little early to be handing out an extension like that. Not that he doesn't deserve it, but let's see how August plays out. Let's see if this team can stay on track here and that they don't look like the last, you know, few years. But it seems like they're secure in this and that they want him to be the guy to bring these young kids up and the future of the team and all of that. And, you know, if that's how they feel, that's great. But if we're talking about the team right now, which I sort of was, like when he got that extension, I thought, okay, this is in part because of the job this team's doing this year and the job that he's done this year, which we were all very impressed by, right? Like, no one was really giving Cora any crap about the way the season was going. And now here you go, another disastrous August. And it does kind of make you wonder, well, what's really different?
Yeah, I wondered at the time what the impetus was, what the timing, how that came together, and not just from your perspective where you're still a little hot and bothered by the fact that he may have told you one of those sports lies, Nick Saban style, about...
I'll never trust again. Ever. The walls go up now whenever I interview anybody.
Skip. I don't believe you. Skip.
Yeah.
So I wondered that at the time. And I wondered if he forced the hand, if he, you know, and then the motivations were like, you know, the perception was, well, he's come to grips with who they are and what they're going to do as an organization. And he's gotten confident with Breslow, and that relationship has grown and improved to the point where he trusts Breslow to invest and do the right thing, not just at this trade deadline, but moving forward in future years where they're going in terms of investing in acquisitions and all that. But now I just wonder how that all came about. I feel like there's a story there. I feel like there's an untold story of the hows, whys, and whens of Alex Cora getting that extension. And now I do feel like some people probably regret it and probably look at it and go, wow, that did not play out how I thought that was going to play out when they did that. I think there was probably the hope that that would be a springboard to finish the job, because this team had been overachieving, right? This team was a...
Absolutely.
You know, I took the under on the 79.5 wins or whatever it was, and this team was overachieving, and they were going to make the playoffs, and it was going to be a feel-good story, and it was going to be a bridge year, but a bridge year where you developed youth and foundations and things that were going to be a part of the future, and woo, everybody's excited. And now it's sad tromboning its way toward the finish line. And he's a part of that story, and he's made some, curious decisions. Certainly... yesterday being maybe near the top of the list. And that's one of those games where if you're scuffling and you give the other reason, the other team a reason to win and they take it, doesn't that like start to let the air out of the balloon? You only have so much air left in this balloon. And it feels like it's kind of like, you're doing that weird hissing noise around the room as it's flying toward the floor and dying.
Yeah, that weird sort of farty noise. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it seems like. This is that last fart that you get before you die. That's basically it. Yep. I think that there's something to be said for that, absolutely. And if we're talking about this year, then it may look a little premature. I think that the whole point of the extension was, all right, Alex, we got this young team. We got these guys coming up through the minors. We want you to be the one in charge of all of this. You're a long-tenured guy. You have a lot of respect in the clubhouse right now. The players still love you. And it seems like you've got them all pulling in the same direction, and it seems like you've got this team really kind of clicking right now. And at the time, that was all true. It still could be true, that first part. Right? I mean, they believe that he's going to be the guy for these young players. They want him there for that. They want him to be a part of that sort of rebuild. I don't know if rebuild's even the right word, because, you know, they're not like tearing it down to the studs. They're just not investing in big name players because they feel like they have good players in the farm system, and they want him to be there to kind of bring them along, which I don't think is a terrible plan. But I also think that, you know, there was a chance that this year could have been something a lot more than what it's turning into.
Do you still have confidence in him?
In like, Cora as manager?
Yeah, do you want him to be the manager? A, how happy were you when he signed the extension? And B, do you like that he's the manager for the next 3 years?
I did like when he signed the extension. I liked the reaction that the team gave to him. It seemed like everybody was on board. I think Breslow said he walked in and everyone was clapping and applauding because of the extension. So that's a good thing. As far as me and my confidence in him and everything, if this was something that happened a lot this year, like if we had been coming on every Monday or every, you know, at the end of every weekend and saying, you know, Alex Cora really had another boneheaded move this weekend in this series or in this game or this, that, whatever, there's been a couple of handful of individual cases like this. But the reason why this one stands out so much is because I don't think there's been a ton of them. There hasn't been not enough to establish like a pattern, not enough to establish a reason to not want to keep him here, all of that. So my confidence in Cora, I don't think is very high right now just because the team's been falling off and because he had this bad weekend. But I don't think it's something that I look at and think, yeah, this whole year's been bad. He's been really bad like this the whole year. It's starting to happen now, and it feels like August is when these brain farts happen and when the team kind of falls apart around him. So it's not great right now, but I do think that he's still capable of doing the job, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes sense. And I'm still all in on Cora. I think he's the right man for the job, for the city, for the team. You have to give him credit for the young players that are part of why the team was in the wild card hunt, right? And the way he handled young players, and you're looking for a guy to bring stability and handle more young players that you hope are coming up within the next 12 months to really lay a foundation of talent for this team moving forward. Like, I still fully believe in him, but the results of the end of the season are the results of the end of the season. And, you know, this happens in so many sports in so many ways. Like, remember Drew Bledsoe? Drew Bledsoe used to, like, light the world on fire early. Oh, he's the first half MVP, and then it would peter out. Or You know, even Brian Flores, when he was the head coach of the Dolphins, remember they had years where it was like they'd finish 8-8, but it was like 8-game winning streak, 8-game losing streak. Like these dramatic shifts. And at some point, when you're a manager or you're a quarterback or you're somebody in the, you know, central figure in a team, you have to explain for those. You have to, you know, figure it out. You're expected in certain roles to not allow that to happen. And Cora has to answer for that. That is part of his narrative right now as a manager. And there's still time, right? There's 25 games, something like that?
About that.
25 games left, which is a lot of games to figure things out and make sure that the bottom doesn't fall out. Now, you've deemed them done. I assume you still believe they're done. Still toast.
Oh, no, after this weekend, I think they're right back in it, Andy. Yeah.
I don't know. Reverse psychology? You never know.
This weekend reaffirmed my worst instincts.
So you think they're done, but do you think they're going to implode?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, me too. And it won't be his fault. Right. Can we say if they shut Devers down, and let's say they shut down like a Hauk or somebody, you know, somebody innings related, like we're not going to waste the bullets in the gun.
No, that's a white flag. That's management waving the white flag. That's not Cora. I agree.
Right. But then I feel like we'll still look back in future years if they're scuffling in August and September and say, wow, this is what his teams do every year. We won't necessarily pinpoint or fixate on the details of, say, this specific season where they did wave the white flag, they called off the dogs, and they decided to live to fight another day, right? Like, because that's coming. Yeah. I'll actually be stunned if Devers isn't shut down at some point in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and honestly, at this point, just from a baseball perspective, it might make sense. He's been absolutely brutal up there, just giving away outs. By the way, last year in the month of August, the Red Sox were 13-15. The year before that, they were 12-16. Their record in August this year was 13-15. So, you know, it's not really it's remarkably consistent. I mean, each year, no matter how they're doing, coming into the month of August, they are going to be a slightly below 500 team in that month, and that's just the way it's been. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phones. Glenn is in Connecticut. He has a thought on Alex Cora. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Greatly appreciate it.
You got it.
Two things. Cora should not have been signed for an extension. Okay, he's just not it. You know, and I think what they did, they placated to the Dominican players. And also, I think if Cora's not cheating, he ain't winning.
Well, you know, that's fair, Glenn. I mean, I can't speak to what they're what they're doing with the players or whatever, but I mean, you know, if the players on the team respect him and the players like him, whatever ethnicity he is, I think that that's an important thing. Like, I don't, you know, whether he's black, white, Dominican, doesn't matter. I think that that's an important aspect of it, and I think if that's something that the players want, then you have to take that into consideration. That's not some bad thing. But in terms of the second part of it there, you know, he's not as been as successful. That's true. And
was he cheating to start the year?
No, but to start the year, they were 500. They had one strong stretch there for about a month.
Right. That had them in
starting
playoff
in June.
Contention.
So, I mean, you know, that wasn't to start the year. But
so
yeah.
that's when they were cheating.
I don't think that they were necessarily cheating there. But, okay. You know, in some of the past seasons, the team got off to much better starts. They were much more consistent all season long, you know. Like, I mean, there's something to be said for that. I think those teams were a lot more talented too.
Yeah.
But either way, I mean, listen, I don't make as big of a deal about the cheating thing because I think that there's many, many managers who all breathe a big sigh of relief that they didn't get in trouble for the exact same type of stuff. Maybe not as blatant as banging on trash cans and things like that, but I do think it's much more common in the game than maybe other people do. And listen, this was Alex Cora versus AJ Hinch all weekend, so I think both of them were probably pretty scared to be caught cheating again on a big stage. Either way, you know, there's an argument to be made that Alex Cora since then has not been as effective. I think that's fair.
It is, but do I think that's why he goes 12-14 in August? No, I don't. I don't think months magnify cheating or not cheating, and I don't think it is this year. My biggest thing is this year, and I know I've argued with this back in the prior midday afternoon show days, like sustainability. When you have a team that is built around unsustainable players or, you know, unproven players in terms of sustainability, I think there's a good chance you're going to fade. Like, that's just the reality. You don't have Judge and Soto healthy in the middle of your lineup. You have Devers in the middle of your lineup unhealthy. And then the rest of your lineup are guys you're crossing your fingers and hoping, or a guy like Casas, you're just getting back, and maybe he's actually slightly better returning than you would have even expected. But this roster top to bottom has been a work in progress all year, correct?
Yes.
Like I mean, they're Jaren Duran, okay, he's established himself. Maybe not everybody, but, you know, whether it's David Hamilton or Rafaela or Wong or whoever the various pieces in and out and overachieving, underachieving, Tyler
Romy
O'Neal.
Gonzalez, you know, I mean, you've seen a lot of names you weren't expecting to see this year, for sure.
Right. And you know, to then say, oh, that damn manager. Is it really the damn manager, or is it the damn talent? And maybe he's done actually a decent job with some duct tape and some super glue keeping this thing together for as long as it was kept together.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, you know, it's the same story here the last 5 years, but I do think that there is something to that, especially when you have a ownership group that's reluctant to really go out and fortify the team.
They're the opposite of the Celtics. Fair. They're the opposite of the Celtics right now. Like, Joe Mazzulla says, well, I'm going to pencil in Brown and Tatum and White and Holiday. If he doesn't win, he is going to be looked at as part of the problem, because the lineup, it's not quite Casey Jones, roll the ball out and just let him go. But the lineup's pretty damn good, whereas the Red Sox are the exact opposite. You know, you have one star player, you have a couple of young players, you have inconsistent players, guys that are in and out. I mean, you could definitely argue that the only reason they even were sniffing where they were is because the manager did a good job keeping it together for as long as he possibly could.
I don't know. I mean, Devers is having a career year up until recently.
He was. He was until 100 at-bats. 100 at-bats ago.
Okay, but prior to that, I mean, there's a lot more bats before
that. Prior to that, they were a good team. Prior to that, and guess what? When he makes $300 million, he probably should be a really good player.
Agreed, but he has been, I guess was the point. You had a good bullpen most of the year. Tanner Houck was in the AL Cy Young conversation for a lot of the year.
Was that sustainable?
No, it wasn't, but I'm saying your pitching staff pitched over its head, and I think that, you know, in general, there was some talent there. It's not like there's no talent on this team.
I didn't say no talent. They're just not loaded with talent.
That's true, and they should have done more about it at the trade deadline. I agree with that, too.
Okay, then it gets up to Breslow. Now you start talking about that. I think there's a natural inclination right now. I mean, we just have people calling for Cora. Shouldn't have been higher. Shouldn't have been this. When he doesn't cheat, he doesn't win. And it's like, I will continue to say this. I've said it for about 3 years. If everybody in a Red Sox uniform and executive-level office did their job as well as Alex Cora, I think this would be a really good baseball team consistently.
Yeah, and that's a big reason why I don't want to throw too much on him, because I feel like that really lets everybody else who deserves more blame off the hook. So I agree with you there. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the only person who had a worse weekend than Alex Cora was Javon Baker, who got in trouble at the airport, which is not something you ever want to hear with a New England Patriots player. We'll get to that next. All right, that was Javon Baker on his Instagram live stream after getting the ticket. At Logan, it had to be Logan Airport, right? He said Massachusetts cops, so it couldn't have been PF Green. He would have been talking about the Rhode Island State Troopers down there, but he was talking about these hating-ass Massachusetts cops walking up to me and giving me a ticket while I'm trying to drop somebody off at the airport. Now, Andy, I think I've dropped enough people off at that airport that I think I have a grasp on what happened here. I wasn't there. I'm only going by one side of the story. I hadn't heard from the cop or anything like that, but I think I know what happened here. And this is something that happens with people who are new to Boston, new to the area. This is the time of year when people are new in town and they go and, you know, jam their moving vans into the Sturrow Drive Bridge and all this other crap. And it's, you know, it's annoying, but it is something that I feel like we're doing a disservice if we don't at least let people know that when you're at the airport and you're dropping somebody off at Logan Airport, you've got to keep it moving. You can't have a long goodbye. You can't be out there, big hugs, you know, I'm going to miss you. You got to get the bags. You got to get them out of the car. Quick hug, quick, you know, whatever you got to do. And that's it. They got to get in that airport and you got to keep it moving. And that's the way it is, especially on long weekends like this. When it's busy there and there's a ton of cars and the traffic's backing up out into the terminals and everything, like that's when those stadies out there get, you know, all right, come on, guys, let's go. Let's keep it moving. Let's go. And I would imagine that, you know, he's a guy, he's not from around here. He didn't really know the way things are at that airport. It's a weird airport, too. I mean, you're just driving around constantly. It's like the Newark airport, you know, you just got to keep moving. You can't stop. And I think that he just sort of got caught up in that. I think maybe the officer was a little much in giving him a ticket. It's not like he was committing the crime of the century or anything like that. But I think that's what it was. I think he was out there, and you're not supposed to get out of the car. You're not supposed to hold up traffic too long. And he didn't realize that and ended up getting a ticket. He went on for about 2.5 minutes hating on the cop that gave him the ticket after that. And it was pretty entertaining. I'm not going to lie. I watched the whole video. It was pretty good. What do you think happened there, Andy?
So I almost don't really care what happened at Logan Airport. It's the idiotic actions afterwards by Javon Baker, or should I call him Karen Baker? Because this is very Karen. He Karen'd, and I like to poke fun at my wife and people that Karen out at various times. Mm-hmm. He Karen'd out in this situation. I mean, he did the whole "I pay my taxes, you work for me." We're going there. You're gonna
do that
now.
Tough.
And then he's like bitching that he didn't have any lights, and he just came up on him and handed him a ticket. And which, by the way, he's now driving with a live Instagram going on, and he's reading a letter. You should hope they don't give you another ticket for being a dumbass and driving to endanger as you exited Logan Airport afterwards. Javon Baker is showing you why his talent comes with baggage, why he was a mid-round pick, why maturity questions are a big part of his scouting report. He has had, I actually thought you might have had Javon Baker in your Circling the Drain segment earlier, because very early in his career, it feels like he's circling the drain in his career. Third team reps on the practice field, dumb things said in press conference. I did my job in the preseason game. Like, mm-hmm. Did you really?
Your job was to drop the big pass.
Right.
But yeah.
So I just, there is a lot to not like about the way Javon Baker has handled himself pretty much since he made everybody laugh with the "I make people in wheelchairs stand up" comment. That was fun. Mm-hmm. That was cool. That was draft weekend. Since then, he's looked out of shape at times. He's looked lost at times. They've had to have some conversations with him, I understand, and now even bigger conversations. To the point where, before this even happened, I had a fellow reporter tell me that they felt pretty good that Javon Baker might be a healthy scratch to start the season. That's where he is in that maturity development mode. Now I feel even there's probably even a better chance that he could be a healthy scratch when the inactives come out a week from now in Cincinnati. But to me, the bigger issue, okay, anybody can screw up. Like, what are we doing going on live Instagram to rip the state police? Like, just dumb. Just, there's no other way to describe this than dumb.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb. I'll agree with that. And I'll tell you who else didn't care for it. Gerard Mayo, who had this to say when he was asked about it.
Yeah, everything that you just stated, look, in no way represents what the organization is about, in no way represents what we are about as a team, or how Javon needs to go out there and represent himself. We've handled it internally. We had a great conversation, and, you know, I think it's a combination of just, you know, immaturity and just realizing the grand scheme. Like, we're on a big stage here, and you can't do those things. As far as, like, our relationship with law enforcement and things like that, I think it's outstanding, and we'll continue to strengthen that relationship going forward.
Can you talk about handling it internally, just to clarify, has that resulted in any, you know, missing a practice, game, any kind of penalty?
Not for this. So there is a penalty, but not to the level of missing the game. We didn't see it that way.
So there you go. They're not going to bench him necessarily, but he may not get a lot of reps. He may not be out there as much. I'll say this. It seemed like Drake May looks for him a lot more than Jacoby Brissett has, and maybe that just has to do with the reps that they're getting together and, you know, the time in the game that they're going into. But if Drake May was the starter against Cincinnati, I wonder if this would be looked at differently, because that's someone that he looks for. That's someone that he's been developing something with. And, you know, if Drake May is your number one, if he's your quarterback starting there, and they said, "All right, Drake, who do you want out there as your wide receivers?" He'd probably say Baker, wouldn't you think?
After that pass over the middle in the second preseason game, I'm not so sure about it. I think he might want the guys that can actually catch the ball.
Maybe.
He
does seem to look for him, though, doesn't he?
Well, he gets a lot of reps with him. They've worked together a lot. And when he's looking to make a play, Polk is not necessarily the playmaker. Sort of the groupings he's been with, Javon Baker is his opportunity to try to make a play. I think if the reps had played out differently, and we both know both quarterbacks acknowledge that Jacoby got all the first team reps, I think it might be different if he were out there with DeMario Douglas and KJ Osborne, the guys that seem or perceive to be, or Tyquan Thornton, perceived to be a little bit higher on the wide receiver depth chart right now. But I also think, and we talked about this, part of the reason he goes to Baker beyond just the reps is he feels like he and Baker and Polk and this group, he's the leader of them. And I do think he's trying to build a rapport, and he's trying to be the leader of those young men that might be the future of the franchise. But I think Javon Baker needs to shape up, or Jerry Glanville, remember the NFL? Not for long. Right now, Javon Baker is in not for long world the way he's handled himself in a very short period of time.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. We see a lot of Red Sox calls lining up, Patriots calls as well. We'll get into all of those as we cruise into the 4 o'clock hour coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.